You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy 2 or 3 select major appliances. And when you buy 4 or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Hey, it was the best dog pile, but that one hurt so much because it was the longest dog pile. And every breath you took at the bottom, it felt like your life was getting sucked out of you. I remember Wilson yelling, "Get off, get off." It was awesome.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's from Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Got a really fitting guest today ahead of the College World Series final. Today I'm talking to one of the heroes of the 08 College World Series, Tommy Mendoza, who is the most outstanding player in 08 for Fresno State, still the only 4 seed to ever win a College World Series. Naturally, we spent a lot of time on that 2008 season. Fresno's slow start, how that team was built for the resilience needed to go on that underdog run, and slaying a bunch of giants on the way to that championship. Tommy's probably the only guy to have a season where he set a strikeout record also be the greatest year of his career. We talk about lots of other fun stuff, playing on Team USA during the Steven Strasburg year, getting a tough break in the business of baseball during his affiliated career, but finishing on a really high note with a great run in any ball. Tommy is a college baseball legend who, candidly, I've wanted to have on this show for a long time. Took me a while to track him down, but I got him. Really excited that we got him right during College World Series season, so I hope everyone enjoys the show. Episodes of Phenom to the Farm drop every month. If you enjoy this one, subscribe and go check out past interviews. They are all evergreen. If you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. BA been covering the College World Series every step of the way. We've also got the draft coming up. Check out the BA 500, mock drafts, and everything else that's going on BA. It's always a good time to be a subscriber. And with that, let's talk to Tommy Mendoza. All right, joining in for today's episode of Phenom on the Farm, he was a second-round pick of the Rangers in the 09 draft out of Fresno State, College World Series champion Tommy Mendoza. Tommy, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
As I told you, I've been trying to track you down for a long time, really, really been looking forward to this one. And I want to dive right into your upbringing in Turlock. And like, when did you realize that you were going to have a chance to be a college baseball player?
I love baseball. Baseball is my passion. We were diehard A's fans, Bash Brothers, McGuire, Canseco. That's all we did as kids, me and my brother. My mom would throw us baseballs, and when my dad got home, he would take over and throw us balls. It was just at a young age, that's what I wanted to do. I didn't play football until I was in eighth grade. And to be honest, I played football from eighth grade to senior year just to stay in shape for baseball. But I loved baseball. That was my passion, and I always wanted to be a pro athlete. My favorite player was Ty Cobb. I never watched him, but I always wanted to be like him.
How did you have kind of in this, this obviously is an audio format so that no one can see it, but you had, especially in college, kind of like an interesting setup in terms of like loading high, coming down low, and more of a rotation as opposed to like kind of a lunge or a stride out to the ball. Was that natural? Was that taught? Like, how did you kind of develop your hitting style as a youth?
When I was young, obviously younger, baseball was easy. Once I got to college, I had a stance for, I think, the first week or two, and then Coach Batesel pulled me aside. I remember this. He goes, why are you hitting like that? I go, well, what do you mean? I go, I'm hitting the ball. And it was BP. He's like, well, we can change a little bit, and you can be a little bit stronger, because I was hitting balls. I mean, as a freshman, you're just trying to yank everything out of the park to impress everybody. And he's like, okay, well, let's just do some stuff. And I mean, it came that way. I know I've read before, he's got an arm bar and just rotates and goes from there. It worked for me. I mean, everybody's got different stance. I mean, I think Council had a weird batting stance in the big leagues, but we all got in the same position before we fired our hands. So, I mean, I guess it worked for me, but didn't get me the big leagues. So it worked for me well enough.
Yeah, well enough, which we'll get into. You mentioned Coach Batesel. What made Fresno State the pick for you? You did have other options. Why Fresno?
I had more options for football, for punting, than baseball.
That's a nice life.
Yeah, and looking back, it's like, hey, I could have maybe still be punting, like, be like a Shane Leckler or a field goal holder for Sebastian Janikowski. That would have been my ideal job. But no, I went to a few different schools. I wanted to go to Cal Berkeley or Stanford. Wasn't smart enough for Stanford. I wanted to go to Cal. Went to a camp there. And I'll be honest, I hated everything about Cal. Their coaches were not nice. Nobody was nice to me there. I was just a person that was another guy at a camp. I'm like, well, okay, throw that out the window. Went to UC Davis and then Fresno. UC Davis was great. Fresno was great. And UOP. But UOP was like, I still have to come with like $40,000 a year. And I'm like, yeah, mom, dad, we ain't doing that. I'm not going to put that pressure on you. So went to Fresno out of a Diamond King showcase at the Fresno Grizzlies. Matt Curtis saw me there. And then we started talking and went on a visit. And I think they were ranked at the time like 24th or top, you know, top 25. Liked it. Decided to go there because in my opinion, I did owed it to my parents to stay closer, and we didn't have to spend much money on Fresno State, and we didn't have to come up with much. So I stayed closer to home for my parents, and it was the best choice I've ever made.
And I mean, good football programs. No conversations with coach of like, hey man, I can boot this thing.
I don't know if Batesel would allow that, but we did have a kid named Nick Bates. He went baseball, and then he went from baseball, went to football the next year. So
feels like not to besmirch the art of punting, but it doesn't seem like the time commitment of like having to being like Jameis Winston and playing quarterback and playing baseball. Like you're just out there. You just got to catch it and kick it.
I would have loved to be like, hey, come punt for us. Come an hour a day. Don't lift weights with us. Stay with baseball. I'm perfectly fine with that. But that didn't happen. I punting was fun to me, and I could boot the ball. I'm not going to lie. I was invited to that Ray Guy camp back east, but I didn't go to that. I wish I did, but hey, baseball proved a different path for me, so I'm glad I took the baseball one.
As you settled into Fresno State, you started as a freshman. You've got that whole first fall to kind of – did you realize that you were going to – you were going to be a player at that level at a pretty early stage, or was it a slower fall?
So when I visited, the only positions that were available were third base and outfield. And Batesel asked me, would you be willing to change? Because I was a shortstop pitcher my whole career. I thought I was going to be a two-way player because I threw 95 off the mound at the showcase. So I was like, okay, I'll be able to pitch and hit. And Batesel sat us down as a family and said, would you be willing to just as long as I can play, I don't care, you know, if I can start, you can put me wherever you want. So first day of practice at third base in college was my first time at third base in my life. And
how long does it take to get comfortable there? Because you're close. You're as close as you can get.
It was so easy. You didn't have time to think. The ball got on you quicker. Okay, hey, knock it down, pick it up, throw them out. I love that transition. I tried going to first later in my career. That was way harder. Being on that side of the field for me than being on the other side. And as soon as I was at third base, having the shortstop range and footwork and stuff and being light on your feet, easy transition. And at that point I knew, I was like, okay, I do have a spot to win and nobody's going to take it away from me. And I proved myself the first month of baseball at Fresno State. And that's all I wanted to do. And I was there for the rest 3 years after that.
Every college team is different in some form or fashion. Like there are programs that can keep it together and go on big runs, you know, and create dynasties and things like that. But like every team is different in terms of personnel, whatever. But like what was in place in 07 that you could credit to being like maybe the bones of that 08 team?
We, Batesel always had it instilled on us. We had a practice plan every single day for X amount of time, get it done right, do this, do that. Discipline was huge. And then we all had a job. So we knew what the 1, 2, 3 hitter was, their job was. 4, 5, 6, 7 hitter, their job was. 8, 9. We never strayed from that plan. And I think that's why we never panicked. Nothing. I mean, we went astray, but we all kept our cool because 1, 2, 3, get on base. 4, 5, 6, 7, drive them in. 8, 9, get back on base. And it was just a simple plan. And pitchers, throw strikes, get ground balls. Fielders, field the route, make the routine plays. And if you make a good play, hey, that's extra. It was just the simplest philosophy, but we stuck to it, and Batesel stuck to it so well. We were such a great, fundamentally sound team with not huge name players, but worked out better for us because we knew what our jobs were and we didn't stray from it.
You say not huge name players, but you go into 08, and if you would have looked, if you look at the 08 roster and you look at the end result, you don't look at anything that happened in between. You just look like, oh, this team won the College World Series. You would see that there's a Tanner Shepherds who was a high draft pick and made it to the big leagues and pitched for a decent amount of time. There's Justin Wilson, who I didn't fact check this. I feel like he's got to be the last guy from the 08 College World Series who's still playing. Like Buster Posey is running the Giants and Justin Wilson is still pitching. There's, you know, you were a high pick. You've got a couple other big leaguers in there. As you go into 08, you know the talent around you. Was the assumption of like, hey, we are an Omaha, we're a super team, we're an Omaha team. Like, what in your preseason rank, like, were those your expectations?
Our expectations, we were in the WAC, win the WAC championship, get to a regional, win a regional, super regional, make it, and win Omaha. We want to be last team standing every single year. And 08, everything aligned with us. I mean, we had a very hard regional to get through, a very hard super regional. But everybody looked past us, and we knew we would always scrap it together. The thing is, we didn't have Shepherds for any of the postseason games. He got hurt, I think, before our WAC tournament. Wilson was our top dog, and Wilson's still pitching. I just saw him face Judge, two Fresno guys. He faced Judge Boston versus New York. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, and the incredible thing, like, well, I was going to talk about this, but, like, reading back on that College World Series and how guys were used, things have changed in terms of, like, how much guys get thrown and quote-unquote overuse and things like that. And, like, Wilson threw every pitch his left arm had in there, and 17 years later, like, he's still healthy and throwing. So, there might be something there, although, like, North Carolina used Alex White to absolute death in that College World Series, and
they overpitched him, but he wasn't built to do it. Shepherds was a starter. Shepherds was built to do it. Our Shepherds. Wilson was a starter. He was built to do it, but Wilson also wanted it. He had the mentality, give me the ball. You're going to have to take this. My arm's going to fall off, and you're going to have to take it away from me. And that's the difference. He was strong-willed and strong, thick-headed. And what he did was what won us the World Series, besides Detweiler hitting 3 bombs and 6 RBIs. But Wilson's toughness.
You had something to do with the World Series, too, which we'll get into.
But, yeah, it's crazy that they treat kids' arms differently, which I understand. But, I mean, look at all the Japan pitchers. They would throw 400 pitches in a day, you know. Mm-hmm. They're still going.
That 08 team, you guys come in, you've got all this talent, you've got expectations. You drop 2 to UC Davis to start the season. You start off 8-12. You have a 2-7 stretch between April and May. Walk me through, because like teams, I've been on teams that you get midway through the season, it's not going, and the wheels just come off. You quit. You're not built for it. And in college, especially if you have a tough weekend, it's like it feels like the worst thing in the world. It feels like the weight of the world's on your shoulders. Walk me through like the week to week of searching for searching for a spark, or we've got to find a way to make this click, or was it just hey, we'll get together, we know they're gonna be there. Like, what was, I guess, the morale throughout that season when it does not start out the way you want it to?
I couldn't get any worse. I mean, what the heck, you know, go out there and keep doing what we're doing. It's got to turn sometime. But we'd rather be bad against non-league games, you know. So we knew getting into league, have everything polished off before league, because league's what matters. League's what gets you into the postseason, and you got to win your championship in league. So, yes, we lost to some, in our eyes, weaker caliber teams, but we learned from our mistakes. We grew better. I mean, yeah, we stunk. I think, what was our record? Our record was 47-31 that year. We
had the first 30 loss College World Series winner.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, but who cares? We won. I mean, it is what it is. As long as you click at the right time, when you got to get in, and we got in. So we can't go off that fact, but we still had to win our in the WAC. So, and that's what we did. We knew we had to take care of business. So that part of the season was gone. Hey, we're terrible there. Let's start off 0-0 when we're getting into the season.
And you talked about like Batesel, identifying roles. This is what you do. What, you know, you're a sophomore, you're right in the middle of that order. What was your role? Because you impressive stat line, both in hitting home runs and racking up the Ks. What, like, when you were up at bat, was it home run or don't run? Kind of what was the mentality there? Because the hitter you were the next year did not reflect that as much.
Yeah, that it was a running joke that by the end of the World Series, I wanted 20 home runs and 100 strikeouts in that seat.
You didn't get there. You didn't get to that triple-digit strikeout mark.
And I don't know if that's still a NCAA strikeout record for a single season.
I don't know. You did lead the NCAA strikeouts that year.
That in my belt. And who cares? We won the World Series.
Again, it doesn't matter. You could have struck out 150 times. You win the World Series. It doesn't really matter.
Exactly. So hitting, my philosophy was, if I struck out, I better save a run on the field. Fielding to me was very easy. I took pride in both, but fielding was very easy for me. And I love being a third baseman and fielding how I did. So I knew if I did fail at the plate, which you fail way more times than you succeed, I would make it up on the field for us with a play or a double play or something crazy where it made up for that at bat that I let down or failed at. And if I got a hold of one, fielding would be a lot easier because it's all, the pressure's off. But that's how my mentality was, yes, I'm allowed to fail more than usual at the plate, because I knew I'd pick it up on defense and save us some other way. And that was how I always looked at it.
And looking at that league schedule, it isn't really like this anymore with most teams, is you guys were playing 4-game sets. And the interesting thing about the college baseball postseason is, like, while college baseball teams are built to win a 3-game series, take 2 out of 3 every weekend, you're going to have a pretty good year. You guys are playing these 4-game league sets. Well, you get into the postseason, to win the WAC tournament, you had to win 4 games. To get out of the regional, you had to play 4 games. You had to win 3 out of 4. Super is a normal series for three weekend, and the College World Series, like, all bets are off. Was that something you guys were conscious of like, hey, we've been doing this, like these 4-game sets help? Like, is there anything there to the fact that you guys had to be a 4-game a weekend team versus a 3-game a weekend team?
I never thought of it that way. All I knew was weekends stunk. Like,
that's a lot of baseball.
Oh my gosh. And I think I tried putting that back in my mind, because that was Friday. You were there at night. You can't turn around Saturday. Played 2. Had to stay at the ballpark all stinking day, and then to turn around and play Sunday. So, yeah, those drug on us. But, like I said, Batesel had us built for, okay, hey, if you guys can do this, then what's 3 games? It's easier, and you're going to have more rest. You're not playing back-to-back. So, I never looked at it that way, but I would, yes, that helped us a lot, because 4 games in a weekend is, I don't wish that upon anybody. That's just bad scheduling, in my opinion.
That's D2 ball, baby. There was a time earlier in my week, 4 games a weekend, and then a bus, then a long bus. As the postseason gets started, how many, from day the WAC tournament started to the last game in Omaha, how many nights did you spend at your apartment or your dorm versus how many did you spend in a random hotel room?
So I think I'm going to have this wrong, but I know from the time the WAC tournament started to when we ended in Omaha, my lease was up, on my apartment with a few other guys. So when we got home, when we were on the flight, my parents had to like clean everything out. They had to get home quick because I had to go somewhere else and play. I think we were maybe home, maybe set, maybe a week out of 30 days. It was nuts. And it was like, okay, pack your bags. Keep packing your bags. Keep packing your bags. Go home, wash your clothes. Go pack your bag. Like, Omaha was the weirdest one because it's like, okay, pack till for this. But then we had, you know, a rain delay or, you know, can't. We played as long as we could of a postseason, you could imagine, because an elimination game there.
That was a rain. It was a rainy Omaha, too.
Oh,
there
yeah.
Had some long rain delay. Like, it extended out. So you guys get to the Long Beach Regional, you get in the driver's seat, you win those two games, but then drop your third, and you play in the first of six elimination games that postseason, because you play two elimination games in Supers because you dropped the first, you play two elimination games in the College World Series final. What was the mentality of that team when back was against the wall, and it's like, hey, season could have been over in regionals once you're in that elimination game? Like, how did you... Clearly you responded well, but like, what was the mood? Were you guys a tense team? Was it very relaxed? Like, what, how did you guys perform that well in so many elimination games?
We didn't, I mean, it sounds nonchalant. We didn't really care. I mean, everybody wrote us off. Oh, Fresno State's Tune Barbecue. They shouldn't be here. They don't deserve to be here. They're only here because they won their WAC and it's a charity case. They have to let them in. It's like, hey, okay, whatever we do is bonus, and we're just going to put our head down and show them what's going on. I think, like I said, we were just so much a fundamental team that was disciplined enough to know, okay, hey, all right, we have to win to keep playing. So let's win. And then once we got further in the postseason, it's like, okay, hey, win or lose, we'll have a summer. We might not have to go to summer ball, so we'd actually get to rest for a little bit. So it was like, some guys were looking at it as a win-win. It's like, oh, just keep playing, keep doing our thing. We weren't very stressed at all because we knew our bats would pick it up. Pitching, we had great pitching out of the bullpen starters. Like, it was just more games to us. We really didn't stress out. I mean, some of our pitchers had bad games, but others picked them up. So
you get into Supers, and that 08 Arizona State team is like as famous as a team as there could be in college baseball, between multiple first rounders, big leaguers. You had Leak, you had Ike Davis, Brett Wallace, Kipnis, a lot of big league time on that team. Pat Murphy's the coach. You're obviously, you guys have this relaxed mentality. You know who you are. You know, you have a lot of talent. Shepherds is gone. You know, is it like a house money feeling? Like, oh, if we lose to Arizona State, we lose to Arizona State? Or, you know, did you guys ever let the was the intimidation factor ever there with some of these teams? Because, like, you know, UNC had Ackley and White and Adam Warren and those guys. Like, did it matter that much at that point who you were playing?
No, we could care. I mean, we lost that first game to Arizona, and then Murphy pulled that stupid thing of Ike Davis and Wallace were, oh, hey, we're going to fight. And it's like a whole warm-ups. We're looking at it like they're like bickering like little kids. And it's like, okay, you're mad at a throw. The guy just hits you in the chest from third base to first. And then you're bickering. And then, oh, after that, let's go Roman wrestle on the mound. Like, oh, hey, we're going to go sumo wrestle and act like we're fighting. It's like, this is the dumbest thing we've seen. A D1 program that's lost three games at home trying to intimidate us. We laughed and were like, let's just kick the shit out of them, you know.
and I mean, you guys came. The crazy thing about that, looking at that run, is it wasn't like you played all these, there were some tight games. It wasn't like, you know, no nail biters, but a lot of these teams you just rolled.
Oh yeah,
like a lot of seemingly low stress games.
Yeah, and that's what you get for putting up a bunch of runs. The end of the game's easier. I mean, we got the job done the first five innings. I mean, you can make a few mistakes and still be ahead. And that's what our plan was. Get on them early, keep going, step on their throat, and then game's over.
What do you remember about the charter flight into Omaha?
Oh, man, that was I wasn't really good at flying. I mean, I got better that one, but – goodness, that was One of the worst flight I've ever been on with that turbulence, because we had to emergency land in Lincoln because a tornado touched down. And I remember looking at the stewardess. I was sitting next to Blake Amador, and all of a sudden the fast seatbelt sign comes on, and they were chill about everything. And then all of a sudden, fast seatbelt sign on. She's like, "Hey, put your seatbelts on." She sits down, puts her belt on. I'm like, okay, maybe there's something going on. I mean, she's not panicking. She's doing a great job keeping us calm. As soon as we start to put our belts on, we just go from like, felt like 30,000 feet up. We just go down to like, we can see the ground. And whoever didn't have their seatbelts hit their head on the top of the luggage. I'm like, holy smokes. And then you just feel, to me, it felt like he just put the throttle down, hammered down, kept going. And I remember getting off the plane. I was like the Pope. I kissed the ground because I was like, thank God we landed.
And this is in Lincoln.
This is in Lincoln. And so we're scrambling to find buses. But I remember getting off, and the pilots were like, that was a 9 out of 10 turbulence we've ever been in. I remember hearing them talk about it. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I went and kissed the ground. And I was like, all right, now what do we do? So we had to wait in the dang airport for like an hour to figure out where buses were coming. And when we went, it was a zoo. It was very interesting, but I mean, did you expect it? How we made it to Omaha, and then that happens.
Kind of fitting. I want to credit, if you listen to the intro off the top, Ryan McGee's book, The Road to Omaha, which chronicles this College World Series, which is where I got the anecdote about the flight and some of the other things we're going to talk about. Would anyone who listens to this conversation read that book? Incredible chronicling of this World Series. But you guys, you finally made it to Omaha. You are, it says it in the book, and by your seating, you are the Cinderella team. You're the team that's not supposed to be there. Walk me through like that walk into Rosenblatt. Like, I believe at that point it was, I don't know if it was for sure settled, but like writing was on the wall that like there are not many College World Series here left. I don't know if they had started building TD or you know, Charles Schwab, whatever it's called now. But what was the experience like of you've gone in this miraculous run and then suddenly you're in college baseball's cathedral?
Oh, Rosenblatt was awesome. I wish they never moved from there. I think there was one more or two more series after that before they went to, like you said, TD or Charles Schwab or whatever. I've been to the new one. Yeah, it's updated, but that old one, history, oh my gosh. It was so cool. Walking in there, I remember it was fun because they had like soda fountain machines because it was AAA for Royals. So we're like, hey, can we have some soda? Like it was cool. It was nostalgic. It was because the zoo was in the background. I mean, every kid wanted to be there since you knew what it was. The atmosphere was awesome. The surroundings, like we would walk in the parking lot, look at some stuff. Like I went with my parents to go look at like the shops and everything. Houses around there, $10 parking, come park on our front yard. Like it was awesome. Like Sandlot type of baseball, but on the biggest stage. It was so cool. The people were so nice. They wanted us to win because we were the underdogs. So it felt great for us to be there.
How would Fresno State have done if they had the Jell-O shot contest that they do now? Have you seen that? The bar that keeps track of which fans take the most Jell-O shots?
Yeah. Well, it depends on who. We probably could hold our own. I mean, we have some good fans, put it that way. I probably throw down better than a lot of other people.
What was the travel like? Like the College World Series is weird because it's like it's obviously harder to get to. You know, fan like LSU and Arkansas, those fans, I think probably book hotels in February and just bake on it. But what was you mentioned like the city kind of pulling for you guys as the underdogs, but what was fan support like versus say a weekend series at Fresno?
Oh, huge. We had people coming in, which was great. I mean, we loved it. We don't care, you know, hey, come watch us at home, but if you can't make it, watch us in Omaha. That's the biggest support we could have. We know you're supporting us, even though you can't be there, but we had a huge following. A lot of people, and still to this day, people come up and like, oh yeah, I was there for one game. I remember this. Oh, I was there for the championship. It's so cool hearing people's stories that were there, but we would never known, but they were there. They're explaining everything to us. It was great having it. We had a great fan following there. And especially the fans from there, from Omaha, were rooting for us. So it was perfect. And like you said, LSU fans were there. because we were eating and they had all their LSU gear on. They weren't there, but they were always, they go every single year, like you said, banking on them being there.
Mm-hmm. I ask this of everyone who plays in Omaha on the show, but it's such an unusual setup. And like, college baseball players can be very routine oriented, very superstitious. I get my work in at this. And like, for a normal weekend series, you know, every weekend, okay, I'm getting to the ballpark at this time and get my work in whenever the games are here, here, and here. Omaha is one, you don't, besides game one, you don't really know when you're going to play next. You've got, you know, there's always rain delays, games run long, thing like that. Like, did that, stats say no, but like, did that affect you at all? Wasn't it an adjustment to, you know, I'm not playing this like regimented weekend if I know what I'm getting my work at? Everything is much more like kind of like a kids travel ball tournament of like, we're just hanging around the city and we've, okay, we got a game. We got to figure out how to get ready.
We would practice still. Batesville would have us practicing.
Did you go to like a high school for that?
Yeah, I think we had two or three practices. We had a simulated game. We were running wall and backs, and it was just like, dude, can we stop doing this stuff? Like, we're here. Like, chill out. We got a game tomorrow. And one of the simulated games, a guy hit a comebacker at our pitcher, broke his foot, so he couldn't play in the World Series. So it was just things like that would happen. And I felt bad for him. I mean, Gene was, he would have pitched and had a broken foot because we had to have a sim game in Omaha. We still did that stuff normal. But you said like, okay, we had a maybe early game or late game. They had batting cages there. You just do like a normal game day. Hey, hit, you know, we'll take a little bit of ground balls or whatnot. I mean, we can just roll it out there. I mean, some guys had to have their routines, but I don't think it really threw us off our game.
That was also the year of these, I don't know if legendary is the right word for them, but Georgia was using those crappy Nike bats. Was that something that you guys were conscious of at all, just as the College World Series was going? Because you guys were, what, like a Louisville Slugger school or something like that? But like
Easton
yeah. School. And so there was something that, I mean, it's in Ryan McGee's book, and like, as someone playing in that era, like, those bats were known to stink. Just absolutely stink. Is that did you guys talk about that stuff at all, of like our gear and who you're using? Like, was that a factor?
Our bats were the best bats in college baseball. Easton has the best bats. Our bats, we had the composites. So the Nike bats, we played Georgia, they had the Nike bats. They would complain, oh, we're using, pick a better sponsor, buddy. I mean, we got Easton, we got it going. And people who complain about Easton's fielding gloves, but the glove's a glove. But no, our bats, the ball would, with those composites, it's a lot different than what it is today. Any bat you use, you got to get used to regardless, but those composites were a little more forgiving than regular, what they have now, put it that way.
Where does an Omaha home run rank versus weekend series at Fresno, minor league home run, Team USA home run? Like, what's it like getting a ball out of Rosenblatt?
I mean, biggest crowds I've ever played in front of. I mean, just hearing it and hitting a home run in Omaha, knowing it's gone and you can kind of take your time around the bases, was awesome. I mean, everybody's clapping, the atmosphere was great there. I would say those rank high. Some Team USA ones, like against Cuba, I hit a grand slam in Germany. I think that was the first time we played in Germany for a long time. That one was cool. So the one when I broke our home run record, it was in La Tech. That one was cool. I mean, it's just, some of them are great, but Rosenblatt's always will stick out because of the atmosphere. And the one I remember the most was the Georgia one. I think we're down 6-0, and then we just pulled ahead after that and kept rolling. That one I remember pretty well.
And you did it with, as Ryan McGee called, described in the book, just a sack full of dislocated fingers.
Yeah.
What is swinging a bat with this? Your right hand, right? So your lead hand?
It was, yes, because in Long Beach, I jumped for a ball and braced myself, and like my fingers touched my wrist. And I mean, thank goodness for our trainers and everybody that given, you know, ultrasounds on it before every game. It didn't feel the best, but you learn how to play through pain. And our training staff did a wonderful job. I couldn't ask for much more. Going above and beyond for everybody who was hurt at that world, even at the regionals, they would open and, you know, hey, if you guys need this, we'll be here. Boom, boom, boom. It sucked, but you know what? You get through it, and it was worth all that pain.
You guys kind of do the same thing you did in regionals. You get yourself in the driver's seat. Like, winning those first two games in Omaha is important. You guys just demolish Rice, just absolutely smoke Rice. 17-5. You beat that UNC team. I think Adam Warren on the hill in that one. And then you've got you drop the third game. So then again, you're stuck in another elimination game. You're playing UNC for the third time. Berth to Omaha or Berth to College World Series final, like, you know, on the house. And at that point, like, everyone's pitching's drained. It's going to be, you're scrapping it together. Is that again, like, just a house money thing? Or did that game feel more elevated than, say, an elimination game in a super or a regional?
So that we lost to North Carolina, I think, because they hit like a three run or a grand slam like in the eighth. So we had that game wrapped up.
So like demoralizing loss.
Yeah, it was like, dang, that sucked. But then I remember there was a guy that really ignited us waiting for whoever hit that home run at home plate with a white towel around his neck, like waving it like being a cheerleader, or they're like huddled like a little softball team. I remember that. I was like, dude, act like you've been there before. I get it. It's a huge home run, but like, be calm down about it, you know? But remember the next day, because we really had a little bit more time to rest than most of those teams. So we really weren't worried about it. Hey, come out and do our same thing, put up runs early, and then get the heck out of there, which we did. I remember, I think, Ackley's lat was, and I think Ackley might have hit a home run there or whatnot, but
I think he hit like 430 on the weekend or something like that.
But he never won one. He was got the most World Series appearance, you know, played there, because he was there, what, all 3 or 4 years?
Mm-hmm. I think all three. Yeah. Alex White, I think, was at multiple College World Series. I mean, and he threw – so what, you faced him three games in a row or something like that? Like,
yeah, but that shows you that he wasn't conditioned to do it. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I think our four game sets where we had to have strategy pitching and guys had to be gassed to pitch for the four game sets we had during the season – ultimately helped us pave a way of having a plan if we had gassed guys or what we would go to or how we would play. I mean, and it worked.
When you get into that College World Series final against Georgia, that it's such a unique College World Series where every team, except I guess y'all's first rounder was not there, but like every team had this guy. Florida State had Posey, UNC had Ackley, Georgia has Beckham, and then Fields just looming there. Like I told you before we started recording, I was at the College World Series. I'm sure I said it on the show before. I had never seen someone who threw like Josh Fields. I mean, now like every big league team has eight Josh Fieldses, but at the time he was just a monster. The long hair and throwing 98 and stuff like that. You know, you guys stare at that team in the opposite clubhouse. Was there at that point you'd slayed Arizona State and UNC? Was there these guys aren't as good as those guys, or what, you know, was there more pressure because of the situation than who that team was?
We looked at him as another person, that because we had our Tanner Sheppers during the season, and that was an automatic win for us. We pretty much chalked it down when Sheppers pitched. It was a little more relaxed. We had a win there. We didn't have them postseason, so we really didn't have that kind of, hey, okay, we got one at least, you know? So I looked at it as, okay, they're leaning on this guy more, so they're going to relax other places. But they, like you said, they overpitched some guys, or they weren't used to getting hit, or they weren't used to having an error, like, or striking out, or, you know, the adversity of playing some better teams or and the good thing was they all looked past us at the press conference. I remember Batesel coming saying he was walking in, I think, with Sesdorf and somebody else for interviews for like ESPN and stuff, and like, oh, how about Fresno State? And he overhears some coaches say, oh, they're 2-barbecue there. They don't deserve to be here. Don't worry about them. You won't be hearing anything about them. So I was just like, okay, whatever. We'll see how this goes. And then you punch them in the mouth and they don't know what to do. Oh, Fresno State, 2-Q. No, we're going to be here to stay.
Drop game one, pretty convincing win game two. Game three, you guys are, I mean, they don't really mount a fight. They scored one run in the game. But because it's the third game of the College World Series, was there, like, if you're in a 6-1 game against Sacramento State at Fresno on a Sunday, you're kind of like relaxed. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, we're good. What's it like? You're on, say, the infield dirt, the seventh inning. You guys are up comfortably. Are you still like living and dying with every pitch the same way?
It was more pressure that game because we knew when Wilson went out and he pitched his heart out. I mean, he did unreal. We weren't expecting that out of him. He give me the ball. I'm going to throw until my arm falls off type of deal. Then we had, we knew our bullpen was getting tired then. I think we brought in Allison. He was a little hurt, a little tender, wasn't working out. Then we had to bring in somebody else. And I know our closer Burke had been pitching. I mean, his arm was done too. So I'm glad we had, because Beckham, I think, was the only run. His last at bat was a home run. Mm-hmm. And he said seventh or eighth inning. We had enough comfortable lead, but we knew it was like, okay, we can see light at the end of the tunnel. It might be a little more stressful, but hey, we got it done, put it that way.
Yeah. Was there any thought in your head of like, I might be the most outstanding player? Like, did you start doing any of those calculations? Like, who are they going to give it to?
No, because that was three tanks and Wilson pitched two great games in that whole World Series. So it's like, last thing I wanted was that. I wanted to win. I wanted the trophy, the national trophy, the trophy in our hanging in our putting our clubhouse and whatnot. It was just, we wanted to be a good story and win it all. I didn't find out until he told me on the radio. I was like, well, I thought Detweiler was getting it or Wilson because they were nails. And I mean, the whole team deserved it, to be honest. I mean, we all contributed in some type of way.
Not to fluff you up, but I was texting with Ryan McGee. I think I already told you this before we started recording, but putting it into the record, I was texting with Ryan McGee, who wrote that book, Road to Omaha. And he texted me this morning when I told him I was interviewing you. He said, I've been doing this for a while. There have been few players that I've seen coaches actively afraid of in Omaha, like they were worried about this guy. And so it seems to me like they gave the award to the right guy. But walk me through that dog pile. Favorite dog pile? Because I'm sure you guys got to dog pile at the WAC, regionals, supers. Is the Omaha dog pile the best dog pile?
Yeah, it was the best dog pile, but that one hurt so much because it was the longest dog pile. And every breath you took at the bottom, it felt like your life was getting sucked out of you. I remember Wilson yelling, get off. It was awesome. But a weight of a lot of people on you in a dog pile, I will never forget that feeling. But that one, yeah, that one was unreal. That one can never take away from us.
How long from being under that dog pile to taking ground balls in Cary, North Carolina?
Well, let me see. We went so that we flew out the next morning. We had the parade. And then I think I flew out that next day. I think I had one day in Fresno, maybe a day and a half, 2 days tops. And then I was on a plane. It's like I never got to really soak in the championship in Fresno or at home because I was gone for, I think, a month and a half or 2 months playing with Team USA. I mean, I loved it, all of it. I mean,
did you get to soak it in when you saw Mike Leake out there? Just be like, oh, hey, buddy, I saw you a couple weeks ago.
I gave him a little crap about it, but
any thought to being like, hey, I'm good. I got these dislocated fingers. I played all the way through June. Any thought to saying I'm good on Team USA this summer?
Absolutely not. Anytime you can represent your country and be proud, I'm going to do it no matter where it is, how tired I am, how hurt I am. It's an honor to represent the flag and play a game you love. There's no better feeling of wearing a United States of America jersey on a field against another country and knowing you are a top dog and you're just going to kick the crap out of them. And I enjoyed every single moment, good, bad, ugly, but putting that flag on my arm, on my chest, on my hat, wherever it was, saying USA, that's what I want to be. You represent the country that you live in. We're free. Love it. I would never say no to an opportunity like that.
often when I have a guy who was on the CNT, I'll ask, like, you know, or in, like, in the fall league or one of these OK corrals where it's all these talented guys, I'll often ask, like, okay, who stood out? Who was the guy? I'm not going to ask you that question because I just, we know, like, walk me through the Steven Strasburg experience, because that was as probably as famous a college baseball player as there's been in the last 20 years. And it was this thing that nobody had ever seen someone throw like that.
Nicest guy I've ever played with, and probably the best pitcher I've ever had the experience playing with. He, I remember we were in a game in Czech Republic. He's throwing, I think, a perfect game. I mean, just throwing an easy 98, 101, whatever he was throwing that day. I remember he threw three fastballs that were pretty much right down the middle. The umpire called them all balls. I remember he turns to me and just is like, what the heck? Next three pitches, he moves like 1 inch to right down the middle and strikes the guy out. I go, this is impressive. How you can control 98 to 101, 1 inch, and just, okay, here you go. If you don't like it there, I'm just, he was unreal. And the nicest guy, because my last regional was down there with him. And I remember walking out right field and I was like, hey, Steve, how you doing? He goes, good. I said, hey, man, you're having a great year. You're probably going to be the Golden Spike. He goes, I already know what I'm doing. How are you? How's your family? He just super nice guy. And that's all I always remember him for that.
When you make that team, when you're around all those guys, being named to that team essentially means you're a prospect. Like, it's a great honor. It's all that stuff. But that whole team gets drafted. Most of them very high. Had you already thought of yourself at that point of I've not just like, you know, if you start for Fresno State, there's probably a chance you're going to play pro ball, but like if you're on that team, I might be a dude who gets money, who gets some status. Like, when do those thoughts start coming into your mind?
I mean, I knew I had one more year playing. Obviously your goal is to get drafted as high as you want, as you can. That only helps your stock. Yes, it does. Cause all those players are great on that team. I mean, I think all of them made big leagues, but three of them. And I'm one of those guys who never had the opportunity to play in the big leagues. But I also was a prospect for a team. I mean, it did help me, but you also still have to go out your junior year and still play, still perform. But my goal was to, obviously, junior year, you're going to have the best season you can with least distractions. So USA helped me figure out some flaws, figure out what I need to get better at. I mean, I was super tired. Like you said, I was pretty much worn down. That was the most baseball I've ever played in my life. But the next year I came back and got better and fixed some flaws that were exposed at Team USA. And I mean, had a great year and just kept going at it and ultimately did get drafted pretty high and did well that year, my junior year.
What were those flaws? Cause you cut your strikeout rate by a third, that junior year. So you were a Golden Spike semifinalist. Like, what, you've won this College World Series. You've been the most outstanding player at the College World Series. What did you put into play that made you had a better year as a junior than you did as a sophomore?
Mental state, knowing that I got myself out rather than the pitcher. I knew I had to improve my offense. My defense would be fine because I knew what to do there. I took defense was very easy. I'm not trying to sound cocky or whatnot. Defense was the easiest part of baseball for me. I really didn't have to work very hard at it until I had something I needed to figure out. But that I could self-evaluate myself quicker defensively than offensively. So offensively with Batesel was a very smart mind about offense. So it was just being more disciplined my junior year and having more, more confidence in myself at the plate, knowing that, hey, I get myself out, they're not getting me out. So be the man up there. You know, that's what I took my junior year, knowing I beat myself more than the pitchers beat me. So figure that out, clean that up.
What was the draft experience like for you? You know, when you're in that like high round range, it could vary a lot of like how many different conversations were you having as a college junior? I have a little less leverage, but still, you know, still some, like, you know, how many did you have like a range for yourself of like, I think I'm going here, I think I'm signing for this?
Yeah. There was a lot of talk if it was from, which was crazy. Seattle had second overall, and Seattle was like one of the top guys I always talked to. So they said anywhere from second overall, you know, all the way to this second round. But most everybody had me talking first round. And then with my, what would you call him?
Quote unquote advisor.
Yeah, advisor. They had
this unpaid friend just doing it out of the goodness of their heart.
My buddies that had a big old book that says these are tendencies. We're going to write this off. We talked to these. So there was a game plan. But you know what's crazy is Texas was never on the radar.
No conversations, no.
I think I might add a few with Butch Metzger, but Texas was never on the book. Like, hey, there may be first round or second round. Never thought I'd be drafted by it. I thought Seattle for sure, because Tommy Davis was their scout, and he was always he throughout the whole draft was texting, talking, and everything. And I'm glad I went Texas. Texas was the top notch organization I've ever played for. They treated everybody. I loved it. They made it a friendly environment.
Is there worry though when you get drafted by someone who you don't have a relationship with? Because it's like there have been stories before of like team drafts a player without running it by them, and then suddenly the number is 200K lower than what they wanted or what they had worked out with someone else or anything like that. Or just like, I don't know anyone over there, man. Like I you know, what is there? I'm sure you're happy to be drafted, but was there any kind of uncertainty of like, oh, I wish Seattle would grab me because I felt good about that?
Yes and no, because at that time there was slot, but there was not like how it is now.
Yeah.
We negotiated. I could have waited another week and done the deadline and probably got close to $1 million signing bonus, but I wanted to play. So I took what, you know, there was stuff you negotiated behind the scenes. It was, you know, signed the contract in California, and then they flew me out and signed it again in Texas. So it was you can now, I think, you look at it that way because the money and this different type of draft. But then there was so much negotiation going on and asked for this. It was just crazy because I never knew that type of stuff. That's why I had my advisor and advise me what to do. And it worked out. I mean, like I said, I never made it to big leagues, but I played a few seasons and got AAA quick and went from there.
It was noted in your scouting report that after signing a little, like you mentioned, you kind of went out right to play, but then you went not like a mechanical overhaul, but definitely made some adjustments. What did, you know, when they came to you with that, what was the plan of, okay, this is how we're going to change your swing, or at least change what you do a little bit?
It was just, I had to adjust to wood bat, plain and simple. I was trying too hard, jerking my body, doing everything wrong.
Missing those Eastons, those comps.
Oh, I was missing those Eastons for sure. I wish I had those Nikes because it'd be a better hitter. Quicker. It was just that. I was doing a lot of bad stuff, and you're not used to playing every single day, not used to bouncing back, not used to being on the bus from Major League from Spokane, Washington to Canada for, you know, 30 hours on that, on just a regular 10 bus. I mean, there's a lot of adjusting to do. Cause I struggled. I did okay in short season, struggled in low A, and double A was the easiest baseball I've ever played. Triple A I think was the toughest baseball I ever played.
What made double A easiest? I was going to ask, your season in double A Frisco is your best professional season, like outside of indie ball. It might've been just your best in general. What clicked there for you? Cause that the high A to double A is considered the hardest jump minus triple A to big leagues.
I think cause pitchers knew where they're throwing. High A, you can have a guy throwing 102 and it can hit you in the back of the head. You're always guessing, you know, and that's tough to hit. And umpires weren't as good as they were higher up. So you're looking for one pitch, you get screwed on a call, so it's already in your head. Like, it's just a mental game, and stadiums aren't as good as the higher you go. You're getting treated better. But double A, I mean, it clicked in double A. It was a lot easier. I had a roommate, Mike Bianucci, and another kid named Green, who was we were either the 3, 4, 5 hitters every single day. It'd always get mixed up. We all had over 20 home runs that year. We all did very well, so we'd always pick off each other. But I was the only left-hander hitting. They were both right-handed, but at least we could talk to each other and how the pitchers were pitching. And Frisco, Texas ballpark, you can't go wrong there. It was a beautiful park, so that helped a lot too. But it was just mainly figuring it out, and figuring out what the do's and don'ts, and nipping your don'ts in the butt quicker and not letting it fester and get in the hole and just keep spiraling down until you can't crawl out.
Yeah. Baseball is a business, and it doesn't always factor in what is the best for the player, best mental situation, best physical situation. Looking at the transactions for you in 2013 is you're picked in the minor league rule 5 by the A's. So it's boom, new organization at drop of a hat. And it's not even like the big league rule 5 where at least you've got the shot to make the club. It's just like, nope, you're over there now. And then release in spring training, have to find a new club, go to the Phillies again, entirely new organization. That's a whirlwind. That's three organizations in the span of 4 months, basically. Like, how do you mentally wrap your hand around it? Because I can't imagine you felt super wanted at that point.
Well, with the A's, I mean, that's my favorite team. So I was like, absolutely, yes. And then they gave me a bunch of stuff that they told me that never came true. So it was going to be the best thing ever. Okay.
So you thought they were laying you out for this great opportunity.
Oh, yeah. They said, okay, you're going to compete for a big league job. Worst case scenario, AAA. But then Donaldson had a great year. Okay. Given that. Had a great spring training. So it's okay. I'll go to AAA. No big deal. And then all of a sudden, a week or two before spring, we're going to go take you to AA. Okay, so I break spring AA. They bring me in because we went like to San Antonio or something after or I don't even know where we went. I had to wear a bus ride for like 20 hours, and I was a bullpen catcher for all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm not even catching anymore. Why am I only catching bullpens, getting in a bat here and there on these sim games and playing? I'm like, what is going on here? So they brought me into the clubhouse, the coaches. And the big league pitching coach, now he was there, and I think it was, I can't remember who the head coach was. Like, hey, we just want to tell you that you're going to be a backup. And I just laughed at him and said, BS. He goes, no, seriously. I go, what do you mean? He goes, you're going to be a backup. You're going to play, you know, this and that. I said, how many at bats will I get? I said, he's like, oh, maybe 100. I go, are you kidding me? I go, I guess told all this stuff, and now your guys are telling you, guys, that's why I'm pulling you in, because you're an older guy, veteran guy. We're going to be honest with you. We don't want you to stay here and be just done, you know, bitter. I'm like, okay. I said, well.
It's crazy. Older guy, veteran guy. You're like 25 years old. Like, yeah. I think about being 25 now and like trying to wrap my head around that is impossible.
It was tough, but I'm glad they gave me the respect where, you know, because I did have great numbers, and they did rule 5, man. Then they're going to screw me like that. So I said, okay, well, let me talk to my agent. But I go, you know, you're either going to play me, trade me, or release me. I said, I think that's going to be my decision. So they made me wear a week of baseball. This is how great the A's organizations are. And this, you can tell that's why they're in Sacramento right now. They're terrible to their players. So I had to wear a bus ride to two different spots and a bus ride home, like 28 hours. When they probably released me that day that I said that, and probably talked to my agent, but they're too cheap to buy a plane ticket for me to go to Midland, pack my stuff, get my car, and go home. They made me wear a week of just misery, and then released me on the right before the last game, but I had to ride the bus home with them, like 22 hours. It was garbage. The A's did not know how to treat their players back then. I mean, hopefully it's different now, but I love the A's and diehard A's fan, but if you get traded there or whatnot, you go there to die. They just don't know how to treat. Like I said, Texas was unreal. Texas spring training, Texas was classy. I have nothing bad to say about Texas. Oakland A's is still my favorite team, has my heart, but they are not ran great. They do not know how to treat their players back when I was playing. I mean, it's just, you go there to die. My career ended there because I went to Phillies as a filler. My whole career was going to be a filler after that because they wanted me and told me all this stuff. And then I just went there to die and wear a bus ride for a week. It was miserable. It sucked.
Was it then kind of I hear this a lot with indie ball, of like when the culture shifts to, hey, we're here to win. Like, obviously everyone wants to get picked back up or whatever. We're here to win. Did you get that feeling of like breath of fresh air, or it's just like, this is what I have to do
for indie ball?
Yeah.
I was so bitter. I thought I was above indie ball, but I am 100% wrong about that. I am so glad I played independent ball. It was so fun. Atmosphere was great. I loved it. I kept playing until they told me I couldn't. And I was so wrong about how I was so much better than indie ball. I would recommend going there. It's so fun. You can get picked up there now. Now I feel like you should get picked up more than there's less drafts, you know? So I feel like there's more indie guys that can go, but I loved it. I was very wrong about independent ball.
Year to year in indie ball, like what are your goals? Does it turn into a similar, no, not the same thing as like Fresno State, but like similar to like, hey, let's win a championship? Or are you still like, I'm trying to get to the big league somehow? Like I'm trying to, like, what is the, I guess the mindset of a guy you're in indie ball, you know, that you have to win. They'll cut guys who aren't helping them win, but also the end goal is eventually the big leagues.
Yeah. So when you're, I mean, that's the first 2 years, like, I want to get picked up. I want to get this. I want to get back into it. Then the older you get, it's like, okay, I'm going to keep playing. If I get picked up, I get picked up. I want to win a championship because these towns love their baseball, because there's really not a baseball, you know, maybe in the state, but not close. So it was, get a ring. The town gets behind you. I think I was on the winningest team, but we never won the championship. But I think we went 75-25 in 100 games. I mean, it was unreal. It was so much.
You were the Arizona State.
Yeah.
You win all these games, and then someone knocks you off in the playoffs.
And then we had to go to Laredo, and they had fresh legs. And it was just, it was fun. I mean, like I said, you want to get back there. Young kids want to get back there. The older you got, it's like, hey, I'm gonna keep playing until they say no. And maybe there does come an opportunity where you get picked back up, but you just keep playing, play as best you can and as long as you can, and get a championship.
You play it out until you're 30. If you could go back and give a pep talk to your younger self the day you signed, what would that pep talk look like?
Figure it out before double A, to be honest. But be more prepared mentally. Mentally, it wears you down, not physically at that age, because I could play 200 games in a year. The physical part wasn't. It's the mental part. And you don't realize that until you have finally struggle for once. Like all these young high schoolers, it's tough because once they hit a bump in the road, because they've always been the number one guy, it's tough, and see how you can figure it out mentally. But that's what I would say, just be prepared mentally more.
Got a little rapid fire for you, and then I'll let you get out of here. Favorite minor league ballpark?
Ooh. I mean, Midland was fun, but not my favorite. I would say Frisco, Texas, and independent ball would be St. Paul.
Oh, yeah. Triple A now.
Oh, dude. That ballpark was a big league ballpark. I mean, they did the right thing of putting that there. Lincoln, Nebraska's ballpark, awesome, because it was the Huskies ballpark. Mm-hmm. Probably the best playing surface I ever played on. Winnipeg has a great ballpark too, but I would say those are my top few.
As a third baseman, you if you find like a sketchy playing surface, that's got to be a long series.
Well, Bakersfield, I played there some games. That I've seen, I saw, I think it was Ryan Wheeler, was taking a routine ground ball, was at second, and it came up and hit him right in the Adam's apple, spitting blood. Oof. I got hit in the that was my worst year fielding, because you were scared to even go to the field and field the ball. Like, you didn't want to, because you might career get ended because the playing surface was so bad.
That's a nightmare. Favorite road college ballpark? Rosenblatt does not count.
Road ballpark. I mean, we really didn't play in too many nice ballparks. Road ballpark. I mean, I like going to Louisiana. That was fun. Hawaii was fun.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, I went there all 3 years. So those for like whack ballparks.
Best pitcher you ever faced?
In minor leagues, a kid named Hollinsworth. I think his name was Ethan Hollinsworth for Colorado Rockies. He had the best changeup I've ever seen, and he could tell me he was going to throw it 10 out of 10 times, and I would miss it 10 out of 10 times.
Shout out to that guy.
Real.
Do you ever pay for drinks in Fresno?
Oh, before negative. No. Now, if I do go out, I will pay for my own. I appreciate when somebody wants to do it, but you know, thank you. But I pay for my own now, and for the fiancés and the kids and all the meals now.
All the meals. But I'm sure there's plenty of people in Fresno who are still like, I remember.
They do, but we'd get in trouble back then in college if we took free stuff.
Man, you would have. Do you ever think about like if they had NIL the year after you came back after that College World Series?
I was Coach Overland is Fresno State now. He was my best friend playing at Fresno. Now he's the head coach, and I was joking with him before. I go, dude, with this nil money, we would have had a good time. Like we would have been. I said, it's just unreal. I don't know if it would have been, you know, 100,000, 500,000, or a car dealership giving you a car. This nil to me is ruining college sports because you don't get me on this rant, but you can't compete with some of these high profile teams that have been doing it before nil. Now it's legal to do. I mean, come on, there's got to be a cap on what you give kids because, and this portal, hey, go to a team every other year and, oh, you can play. There's no penalty. It's ruining college sports, in my opinion.
The portal, the free agency of it all is the thing that I don't like. Is like, if you want to listen, if you're Texas and you want to pay your shortstop $500,000, do it. But a lot of, it's small sample size, but you look at this year's postseason, a lot of those big money teams got worked by teams that built it up with recruits and JUCO guys and built a program. And like, you've been there, like when you have dogs that are willing to fight versus a bunch of hired, like there's talent will win out in some certain, like Arkansas and LSU might win the College World Series.
Yeah.
But like, if you have some dogs and you're all there to win, like there's something to that. But I would love to see them tighten it up in terms of like how free moving everything is.
Absolutely. They need to sit out a year. And then if they go somewhere else, sit out 2 years. There's got to be a penalty because I would stay, say, if I'm making nil money and I'm getting $1 million, like these college guys, okay, I'm going to get drafted, but you're making $10 million playing college football. You're going to go and you get drafted in the fourth round. You're not going to see that money. What's the incentive of getting drafted now? I would stay as long as I could in college, have my master's paid for. If they're paying me $1 million or $2 million a year, I know that's guaranteed money because I could get hurt after signing my contract and never make that type of money. It's just, it sucks. There needs to be a penalty for moving schools at least a year because you can't get any younger, so it hurts you, or a money cap. I get it. Yeah, okay. You can pay them whatever you want. Like you said, it doesn't win you ball games, but there's got to be certain, because other teams are never going to compete. Why even have D1? Just have, okay, here's the nil World Series, you know?
Yeah, I go back and forth. We're off topic now, but it's like, I think about like if I'm a kid who's at Middle Tennessee State and I blow it out and like you've got the opportunity to go to this once in a lifetime play for Arkansas or LSU or something, that's one thing. But like if you're at Texas and you're going to play for A&M or LA, like no, like stick it out. Like
that, there's got to be some punishment. There's nothing, there's no accountability to, hey, I'm gonna leave, thanks.
Like, yeah. Well, because it used to be if you want to move down, like in D2, we would get D1 kickbacks every year that they want to go. They want a place to play. Or if you move from, if you want to move from the SEC to the WAC or the American, like, you know, cool. Whatever. But like the using the small schools as a farm system and then all, you know, but shout out Murray State made it happen against, you know, went into Ole Miss and took that regional and took it at Duke. And, you know, I'm going to root for schools like that forever.
Absolutely. And it's a great, it shows you that, like you said, you don't have to have the high powered stuff, but I think it's you're in a rabbit hole and you're going to keep going until something stops there with that nil money and transferring stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last thing I've got for you, everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues or indie ball? Sure. You got, I mean, you already kind of said that like them dragging the A's dragging you around is pretty tough.
That one was miserable. I mean, independent ball. Obviously, you can start boozing in the back and having guys puking in 5-gallon water jugs. That was miserable because you had to smell it. But for me personally, that what the A's put me through after telling me all this stuff, I hope they told me that stuff was true or if they were just blowing smoke. But that ride, knowing I never – my name was never saying I played for the A's, because I think they had to have released me before the season, but never told me and made me wear seven days of still being there. It's like, now I wish I got hurt there. What would they have done? Like, you know, what if I would have known that? I wouldn't have done it on purpose, but less if I got hurt and they released me and didn't send me home because they didn't want to pay for a ticket or whatnot. That's a
work comp claim right there.
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't the best situation there, and it is what it is. Like I said, I hope they're better, but that would be my horror story about that. And never having sleeper buses. I had sleeper bus 1 year, and it was sleeping on buses double up is never fun.
Oh, and now again, you might have played 10 years too early because they got the life now.
Oh man, it would be so much easier. No stress.
It all worked out that where the video isn't posted, but you got that ring. That thing is gonna last forever. Tommy, that is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from being on the farm.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me anytime.
And that's it for today's episode. Thrilled that we could have Tommy Mendoza come by and talk through the 2008 College World Series. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We'll catch you in a month. Thanks for listening.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.